And the other thing to think about is that while I'm talking about same-sex attracted and gender-diverse staff and students and parents, etc., and the focus is there, it really is about a broader discussion of what is diversity and what we mean when we think about diversity and addressing issues around the other, be it gender, be it sexual orientation, be it disability, be it color of their skin, etc. So for a lot of the slides, it really does, I'm hoping to try and stimulate thought around the other. What do we do? And how do we acknowledge and how do we recognize the other? So what I did, and some of you, thank you very much for grabbing the labels. And as I've been reading more and more into this and been learning more about a lot of the queer theory stuff, I've realized the importance of labels and identity and how people's identity is tied up with how you speak to them and how you recognize them. And I didn't check, I didn't ask, and it's also not important how many people have hers, there may be some here who identify with a non-binary sort of pronoun, and it's about that recognition and verbalizing of the identity and that acknowledgement that we are different. And that, you know, studies show that there shouldn't be all, it shouldn't be he, him, his, and they, she, her, hers is here. There should be other genders, and are we recognizing, are we verbalizing them? And that, I think, is what captures the talk today. I like to refer to them, and I know I've been teased about it all morning, but I like to refer to my opening act, Bishop Tutu and Edwin Cameron, etc. And they challenged us on this idea of respecting others and acknowledging the oppression and embracing diversity. So I'm hoping to take the theme that they started with and sort of hopefully, you know, one of the final speakers here, bring it sort of to a close. Okay, so what I'm going to be talking about is really just two things. It's going to be a long-winded two things, but they're two things. I'm looking at schools and the GLBTI, quilt bag is another term that I quite enjoy. Queer, undecided, intersex, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, asexual, gay. Sexual orientation, you talk about SOGI issues. Sexual orientation and gender identity, the term that I'm using currently is same-sex attracted and gender diverse students and staff. And then the other thing that I hope to get to, but Cheryl is probably going to stop me, is the Fair Go Sport project that I work on. It's a really exciting project that I work on at the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. So apologies for, at some point I'm going to start speeding up frantically, but I hope you enjoy, and please ask any questions. I think at the end is probably safest, just to make sure that I get through this whole thing. All right. So before we get going, I thought that it's important that we understand sort of what we're talking about. And there was a talk yesterday, Tim and Jonathan, I don't know, here somewhere, had a very similar picture on here. But in this weird, messy world, language and terminology is so important. And this is a wonderful little idea, picture. So think about, there is the whole person. Oh, sorry. Gender identity is located in the brain. It is who you are. So some people identify as woman. Some people identify as a man. Some people are gender queer. In fact, I went onto Facebook, and Facebook very, in a huge marketing hype a few years ago, came out, they said, well, we now have 75 different ways you can identify your gender. I'm sorry to say that this is already outdated. There are over 100 that you can now choose, plus you can fill in your own gender identity, something other than that. And you know, they all mean different things, there's slight nuances to all of them, but that is your gender identity. It is how you in your head think about yourself. Your orientation is, well, it's down here, is who you love, who you want to go to sleep, who you want to go to bed with. Heterosexual, bisexual, homosexual, pansexual, again, a variety of different choices there. So that is your heart. Your biological sex, the bits that we're born with, and that's all they are, male, female bits, intersex, etc. And your gender expression is how you express who you are. So today, for example, I would say that I am, I identify as a man. My gender expression today is quite masculine. I have been known to wear a dress, which would move me across to feminine, but rarely, rarely, there's dress-up days. My biological sex is male, and I'm a heterosexual. No. Yeah, we're gonna pull that one off. Okay. So, and I think what's interesting is that for us boys' schools, and I've taught in some fantastic boys' schools, is that we often teach to these edges over here. So we want men who are masculine and who exhibit the traits of maleness and predominantly want heterosexuals. And that's the binary, I suppose, the edges that we teach to. And it's about acknowledging that there is this huge field of gray and probably pink and purple and all the other rainbow colors that are there. And that, how do we acknowledge that? Boys who express themselves in a feminine way, what happens there? I'm going to tell stories. We, at the Human Rights Commission, before we start the Fair Go Sport project, we give the schools a survey that they have to do in order to gauge the sort of climate at the school around these issues. And this year, for the first year, when we asked about gender, we included male, female, other, please tell us if you want to. And of course, I mean, you know what it's like. You're sending a survey out to a group of students. They're going to, you know, variety of them, some of them put in some really silly things. But my absolute bar none favorite was one student who didn't identify as male, didn't identify as female, identified as other, and when they verbalized who they were, they said, "I'm fabulous." You know what? You are on top of this whole thing. You don't need any of us to come and help you. Fantastic. All right. So the question then arises, why am I having this talk? Aren't we in some sort of, I don't know, I've referred to it as some sort of post-gay world? The Stonewall picture, for those of you from the UK, those of you who enjoy Ellen, we watch it, it's on TV, we've got Will and Grace, we've got Modern Family, you've got gay characters on just about every show now, you've got gay newsreaders, you've got gay television personalities, surprisingly enough, not a lot of gay top sportsmen yet, so that's an interesting, and I'll not touch on that in a little while. So are we in this post-gay world? Has society moved on? And why are we as schools not necessarily ready to catch up or start that and start that discussion? What are we scared of? If we are in a post-gay world, why do things like this happen? Has anybody read And Tango Makes Three? No. It's a story. It's a fantastic story. It's a true story about what happened at the New York Zoo. Two male penguins, Roy and Silo, got together at the New York Zoo. They started to try to build a family together. And one of them moved a little rock, and they built a nest, and they sat on this rock. And eventually the zookeepers brought a little egg, and they raised an egg. The egg hatched, and that was Tango. Fantastic story, somebody made it into a children's book. From 2006 to 2010, I'm just going to get this stat right, it was the most challenged, most banned book in American library systems. This story, this kiddie story, was more controversial than any other book in the American library system, except for 2009, when it was the second most challenged book in the library system. So, what are we scared of? Again, sorry, a horrible little personal anecdote. I'm in this world. I think about these things, and I'm trying to think about these things in deep and meaningful ways. And right down the road from me in Melbourne, there's a wonderful bookstore called Hares and Hyenas. And I have been going there for a long time. It's a little gay and lesbian bookstore. And I've been going there for a long time, and I'm so pleased. And I've been looking at the display on children's books, and they've got lots of them. You've got a variety of, you know, I Have Two Mommies, I Have Two Daddies, Tango Makes Three, Prince and Prince, all these lovely little children's books. And I've been going, rah, 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 fantastic, fantastic. Isn't this great? We're into this. Society's on top of this. Just before I came out here, I knew that from this conference I was going to my family in George, just down the road, or not down the road, a couple of miles away. And I had two lovely new nieces and nephews. And I looked at the books and I thought, well, why aren't you buying those books for your nieces and nephews? Would you buy those books for your nieces and nephews? If I wandered into, I'm going to pick on some of my colleagues here, I know Jackie Withers has got younger children, So if I wanted into Jackie's house with a book, Prince and Prince, there was part of me which was going, well, how would Jackie react? Would this be appropriate? Am I indoctrinating her children? What's my mom going to say? What's my sister going to say? I walk in there with this book, and 9 times out of 10 they're going to say absolutely nothing and actually quite enjoy it. But it was that sort of my own personal thinking which went, why am I uncomfortable with this? Anyway, it was just interesting. So we are post-gay. We've got I had a whole bunch of other quotes here, but this was my absolute favorite, and it was said a couple of years ago, and I mean, I could have taken any of the American, most of the American Republican politicians currently. The Australian same-sex marriage debate is getting very heated, and things are getting said that are controversial, but that was my favorite one. 2003 was, I don't want a gay teacher to teach my child. And my only response was, too late, honey, too late. So, where does our, I suppose, where does our desire to keep sex and the discussions of this outside school come from? Where were those boundaries? And why, in my sort of slow reading of this, why is it harder for boys' schools to talk about this than it is for girls' schools to talk about this? And there is a lot of history, etc. So I'm going to ask you, because it is 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to ask you to do something which I was told by two people when I was running through this, it's going to make you feel uncomfortable. But you know what? That's okay. And I want you to think about your discomfort if you are uncomfortable. I'm going to ask you to silently indicate your answer to the statement by standing up if you think that your answer to the statement is true. So it gets a little bit of, you know, movement going. I'm not the only one standing up here. So just stand up. I've only got 5 questions. So could I ask you to stand up if you have a close friend or family member who identifies as same-sex attracted or gender diverse? Thank you. Could I ask you, get you going a little bit? Could I ask you to stand up if you had a teacher, a lecturer, or a mentor who was openly same-sex attracted or gender diverse? Thank you. I haven't got everybody yet. Stand up if you have heard people, I suppose boys, the students that you teach, say things like, that's so gay, no homo, whatever, in school. Thank you. Right, two more. So think about this. Are we post-gay? We're just, yeah. Stand up if you've heard people make negative comments, or you have made negative comments about someone's gender. For example, calling someone a sissy, or saying, stop acting like a girl, or, you know, be more like a boy. So stand up. Okay. Thank you. And last one. This is the most interesting one. Last one. Stand up if you feel that people at your school can be open, out, and vocal about their sexual orientation or gender identity without any threats of being bullied, harassed, marginalized, ignored.
Are you talking about students?
I'm talking about students or staff. Fantastic. Big party. You can sort of, if you're ready for a squat, you're welcome to squat. So maybe it's Sunday for students, but not for staff, or other way around. Yeah. Okay, so thank you. So it's just to get you moving to. So, let me tell you just a little bit about the research that I'm doing, and that maybe gives you some idea of where I'm coming from and what I've been reading, etc. So obviously it's Australian focused, and I'm looking at this situation that exists, and I think that it can be pulled across most schools or most countries. The situation that exists is that there are a lot of guidelines, there's a lot of legislation which says you should be, I'm just trying to read some of them, you should be creating confident and creative individuals who have self-worth. The Melbourne Declaration for Educational and Early Childhood, Melbourne Declaration on Educational Goals says we should be promoting equity and excellence. All young Australians should become successful learners, confident and informed citizens. The Charter of Human Rights says, you know, we cannot discriminate. So there's all this legislation, there are these guidelines that exist. South Africa, I mean, we can throw that in the Constitution there. American education system has the British, I'm sure, as well. And so there's that position that we have. On the other hand, there's a mountain of resources that exist. In Australia, the Safe Schools Coalition has got piles and piles of things that schools can do, and guidelines on the internet. Eason in America, Stonewall in the UK, they have got piles of things that schools can do. Easy things, more difficult, some challenging, but they have got these piles of things. And what I'm trying to look at is this situation here in the middle. So we've been told we have to do it, we should be doing it. We've been told that here's the stuff to do it. But not many schools are actively actually doing anything. In Victoria, for those people, I see there are some Victorians here, There are about 2,500 schools in Victoria, but only about 150 of them have signed on to or have become members of the Safe Schools Coalition, which is a coalition which looks at providing professional development for staff. And now, while I'm not going to get into whether or not that's enough, you know, for somebody to come in and talk to staff about same-sex attracted and gender diverse students, leave, and then suddenly sign you up, is that enough? But not for this discussion, but what are we scared of? Why? What is that space? So my research is, what prompts schools to get going? What is the catalyst to get going and make this change, or to start addressing these things? And the reason I'm interested in it, and the reason that I think it should be on the agenda, is really has to do with that idea that we all struggle with. And I don't think that this is necessarily just a student thing. You know, students struggle with identity formation. We're all struggling with identity formation. And identity revolves around the fact on how we see ourselves, so our personal identity, our self-concept, how we relate to others, how others see us, and how we integrate into our social community. And it's this, particularly the situation over here, is how we see ourselves and how others see us. And if we're constantly trying to integrate them. I know there are a lot of different theories in identity formation, but this is the one that I identify with most, is we want to integrate those two. And when we're in a situation where how we see ourselves is vastly different from how society sees us, that's where that tension and anxiety exists. So that's, all of us are going through this. Add on to that the issues of same-sex attracted and gender-diverse students. It could also read students with disability. It could also probably be students of colour, etc. But the work that's been done by Halverson, etc., says that young same-sex attracted people identify, have more extreme developmental challenges. And they have to manage that sort of stigmatised society, stigmatised image of them, and potentially hostile environments, etc. Okay. The other thing that really has caused me to start thinking about this is, some of you will have heard that term, heteronormative environments, etc. And this is an amazing quote for me, and I'll read it, for there might be some people who can't see it. Oppression is the disadvantage of the disadvantage and injustice some people suffer, not because of a tyrannical power that intends to keep them down, but because of the everyday practices of well-intentioned liberal society and the systematic and structural phenomena that are part of the basic fabric of society, not a function of people's choices or practices. And I think that once we start to engage in the idea that schools, society, is a site of oppression, and we do other people, make them an other, then we have to go through this process of reflection on how we do it, and what we're doing, and how we behave. And oppression is the shadow of power and privilege. You have power, you have privilege. The opposite of that has to be, how do you use that? And do you marginalize or discriminate? Unconsciously. I had an interesting situation talking to some people at the conference. I've had some fantastic chats. And one of the points that they said was, well, our school, we just don't talk about sex and sexuality. We just make sure that it's not in the room, not in the classroom. And I said, well, that's fine. I wasn't sure how you did this, but that's fine. But let's think about a straight heterosexual teacher coming in on a Monday. Class says, well, what did you do for the weekend, sir? Well, I went with my wife, and we went to the beach, and we went to a holiday. I took my kids, etc., etc., etc. It's a fairly innocuous, fairly common conversation. And we wouldn't bat an eyelid at that. If a gay teacher walked in, and again, I'm certainly obviously stereotyping here, but in most schools, a gay teacher walks in and starts a similar conversation, it suddenly moves from just an innocuous conversation to some sort of political act on, well, you know, am I allowed to say this? Should I be telling you that I have a male partner or female partner or whatever? And it's that sort of side, well, I suppose the leads into the next video that I'm going to show you, that those sorts of silences, which I think schools need to start thinking about.
You know that dream everyone has? You know, the one where you're trying to run, but you can't. Or when you're trying to scream, and nothing comes out. Well, Well, that's what it's like. I used to try to scream, speak up, to make a noise. All there was silence. Now, I don't even try. Neither does anyone else. I just stay silent.
Obviously, there's physical violence, etc., not dressing appropriately for the act or for the event. Apologies. I applied for my first job in Australia, and it was at a Catholic school, lovely little Catholic school in the western suburbs of Melbourne. And there were two really interesting things that happened. Day one, when I got the contract, it says, so there's an important contract that you obviously, your conditions of employment that you sign. And the contract says, there's a phrase towards the end, which says, you will live in accordance to the Catholic values and traditions, both in the school, live and behave according to the Catholic values and traditions, both in the school and without. And voila. So I went to the principal before I signed it, and I said, listen, I think there's just something you need to know, that this phrase sits uncomfortably with me because I live with a partner, a male partner, and obviously that is in conflict with what you've got. And he said, spluttering. That's okay. There are others on the staff that are in a similar situation. And what we want is just that when you come into your class, just don't come in waving the flag all the time. And of course, I promise you it was this gesture that was my best. Because, hold on a second, I have not used jazz hands. It was that idea of silence. In fact, it was that particular school that I've had my most open and honest conversation brought up by students about my own partner. And while I was at Bishop's, it was a different situation. I had no partner. But it was a wonderful school to teach at. The students were incredible. First or second generation Australians, very open to the discussion, but that discussion was not allowed to be had at that school. That was very, very interesting. All right, so I'm going to get on to the educational conundrums as I see them, and the challenges for schools. I'm going to try and rush through this so I can get to questions and to Begos Board. I'm about 20 minutes, 24 minutes. Okay. What I want you to do, please, and the first conundrum is this. Close your eyes, and I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. So close your eyes and picture a dog. Imagine you're walking that dog, taking it out for a lovely long walk, maybe down the avenue here. Imagine how you would describe that dog on a website or on a web page that's offering to sell dogs. And then picture what you would be prepared to say about that dog to prospective owners. All right, so open your eyes. And I hope that was the dog that you all pictured. One of those two. It's Rupert. I haven't seen Rupert for 3 weeks, and that's Dudley over there. And the conundrum is this, is that when we talk about an issue like diversity or social justice or what's the other one, inclusivity, we all picture something completely different. We all, you know, we have these different ideas on what is social justice, what is diversity, and how is that enacted. There's a great quote, and I'm sorry to have to read it here. All schools, and I actually say all schools because I went onto the Bishop's webpage, sorry to put the Bishop's, Mr. Pearson's not here, Bishop's on the spot, and first page on the Bishop's webpage is, we cater for all walks of life, all walks of life converge here, we are rich in diversity. And I'm sure that if I went onto any of your school's web pages, diversity, inclusivity, social justice would not be far away from page number one. So the quote around that I really like is that these words are important in educational documents and policies because who would dare to oppose them? But the fact is that's difficult to judge because everybody has different values and different goals aligned to each one. And they have become all-encompassing concepts that are sometimes considered to be signifiers of everything and yet nothing. So what is diversity? Is our first thing. How do we want our school to talk, think, react to diversity? And the other conundrum with that is that, and again, I apologize for the very text-heavy slide here. The other conundrum is, what do we actually want as schools? We are Janus face, the Greek or Roman god, historians, who had two faces. And in the one face, and I've heard these speeches and presentations at this conference, we want inclusive, we want a socially sensitive society, we want multiple sources of knowledge, we want mobility for diverse students from marginalized backgrounds. That is a goal. But at the same time, and I think sometimes particularly boys' schools, We are stuck in a sort of socially regulatory agenda that serves the interests of one dominant power, and that those students who are most closely aligned with that are the ones that are able to take up that power. And that's the dilemma, the tension that exists at schools. And again, I told you, I'm sorry, it's messy. I cannot give you an answer. You should all look this way, or you should all look that way. Look in the direction that your school is comfortable with. But be aware of what you're doing. The second conundrum, I think, is, so what do we do with these gay students? And what are their stories, and gay students and staff? And there's been some really interesting research done by these two guys, and they collected stories of young people, and then tried to come up with an overall narrative. Now, it is important to realize that I'm presenting them here as a dichotomy or a binary, but that, again, you've got variations on this. And the first is the idea of that they heard a lot of stories, particularly in the late 90s, early 2000s, around these stories of struggle and success. That idea of internalized homophobia, that idea of the stress, the minority stress, the depression, how the society had affected you, and that once you had overcome that struggle and come out, the stories of success began to emerge, the stories of resilience began to, or your own resilience began to build up. So there are those stories. And you can think about those students at your schools, and particularly, I was chatting to some teachers here, and they keep talking about the students that come out after being at school. And that would be an example of that struggle of success, narrative of struggle of success. At within school, going through all those emotions, thinking about who you are, who you want to love, etc. And you know, I'm not saying that everybody needs to jump out of the closet with flags and bandanas, but I'm saying, you know, that's the reality. The other narrative that's starting to emerge more and more, and I hope that there are some students or staff at your school, is this narrative of emancipation. Young people coming out at 12, 13, 14. There's a statistic I read recently on one, from one of the British journals, which was saying at 43% of students know at age 13 what their sexual preference is. At age 13, have we even started talking to young boys, young students, at age 13, before age 13? About how this all works. Do we say, well, this is a high school issue, we leave it to high school? But the narrative of emancipation is coming out of kids being out at school, kids being out and proud, and take me as I am, and that's great. They live in this diverse sexual life way, and again, a little bit of research is coming out that says that those students who are out at school and earlier are more resilient as they grow into adulthood. So, something to think about. And the third and final conundrum I have here is, so what should schools be doing? What should schools be promoting? Because again, there is a tension between the idea of liberation and assimilation. And in fact, in this particular case, I should never have put them up along next to each other, because I think that there is far more gray area between here than is depicted on that slide. But the liberal, well, actually, let's start with the assimilation one, is one that I think that we, and maybe your school, maybe I should ask you, which where your school tends to move to. So the idea of assimilation is that, well, let's all just act like, be like everyone else. So you come here, whether you're black, whether you're disabled, whether you're gay, whether you're straight, we're all going to churn out a, that is what a bishop's boy looks like. And we're going to break down practices that discriminate, and you're going to be like everyone else. And the example here is the gay marriage debate, is the idea of, well, we want to be like straight people, so we should have access to that as an institution, so we want to be like everyone else. Okay. So that's the, I suppose, the struggle for assimilation. But at the same time, the mirror of that is the struggle for recognition and liberation. We are not like everyone else. Black students, gay students, disabled students are not the same as those that are in a hetero-privileged situation, I suppose. And the idea is to encourage stakeholders to stand up and call attention to themselves and to recognize their cultural history and their cultural practice and value the differentiation and verbalize that differentiation and acknowledge and celebrate those identities. And there is space, obviously, to do both of these and to move between them and have recognition at certain times in certain classes or throughout your curriculum, etc. I'll talk to some ideas on this. And to move to saying, well, we are bishops' boys. I'm sorry to keep using bishops here, but there's part of me that still belongs. But at the same time, that we recognize that liberation. And, you know, again, I put the question, where is your school on this whole issue? And I suppose while we're sitting going through these conundrums of what is diversity and what is the story that the students are talking about, and what should our school be doing? While we are pondering all this and twiddling our thumbs, to use a rather aggressive term, I suppose, think about the following. Here's the test. And I have used Australian stats, but I spent some time, and I'm sorry to have kept it on the Australian stats, I looked at the Gleason site in the USA, which is the Gay and Lesbian Educators Support Network, UK one, Youth Chances, and thanks to Jonathan and Tim's speech yesterday, I did some research on, went and read Deva Barner's writings around same-sex attracted sexualities in secondary schools. My favourite part there in that presentation, and I think maybe something for you to ponder a little bit controversially as a hand grenade that gets thrown into the audience, homophobia, in his research, Deva Barner's research, he says homophobia and misogyny are interlinked and must be fought in tandem. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting twist. But nonetheless, so the statistics, the point I'm making is that the statistics are very, very similar. So have a quick read through that. And there you go. I should have given you pieces of paper and made you test you. But we're looking at, think about the size of your school. Where about 10% of the students in your school are same-sex attracted or gender diverse, or not exclusively heterosexual, have gender pronouns that aren't he, him, his. I particularly like that the stat around transgender and intersex, meaning that the students are there.
Can you just tell us the difference between the two? Sorry to interrupt, but I don't have a clear difference between transgender and intersex. Sorry.
So intersex is located biological. Intersex is normally two, you might be born with two sexual organs. Hermaphrodite is a term. Transgender is someone whose gender identity doesn't match their biological sex. So you, for example, might be born with a penis, but your gender identity is female. And it's situated up here. Sorry.
Thanks.
No. And the interesting thing about transgender and intersex, I was hoping Graham Clerk was in this room, is it's the same occurrence, same prevalence as people with red hair. So if you know somebody who is a redhead, you probably know somebody who is intersex, or I mean, I know that's a long bone call. Graham Clerk, I'll get back. So that's a similar sort of percentage of the population. These are the frightening ones, and this really does come up in paper after paper after paper. The most important piece of work, and again the Australians know this, is the work by Lynn Hillier called Writing Themselves In, and she's been doing this study over a number of years. Starting in 98, there's a Writing Themselves In 1, Writing Themselves In 2, and Writing Themselves In 3. And this statistic has actually gone up. So again, are we post-gay? No. You could start to talk about the idea of young people know how to talk about homophobia and know how to recognize homophobia, but the scary thing is the stats gone up. 61% recognize of young people experience verbal or physical abuse, same-sex attracted. 80% of that abuse happens at schools. 40% attend schools with absolutely no structural support. And I'm going to come back to this because obviously it leads into the Fair Go Sport discussion around 41% feel targets of frequent homophobic abuse during sport and PE. And this was the recent big study that was done. It's a huge, big global study called Out in the Field. They had the Bingham Cup, the Gay Rugby World Cup. And they did a huge, big study globally online. And they came up with these statistics. And you can go have a look at your own country stats in there as well. And South Africa is represented. 81% of young gay men and 74% of lesbians are completely or partially in the closet when playing youth sport. I'll talk about sport now. So what are the impacts of these stats? It shouldn't come as any surprise. There was somebody in Jonathan and Tim's speech, and I apologize because I didn't have a chance to talk to that person, was talking, I thought that was so beautifully put. She spoke about a young gay student who came back to their school, one of the boys' schools, and she spoke about talking to that young boy and saying to him, well, didn't you feel part of the school? And he said, I always felt like a guest, never a host. And I thought that was the most beautiful way to put that, is that that is often those students who are struggling in that narrative of struggle and success, etc., feel like the outsider. And I can reflect on my own school career, I can reflect on my own teaching career. I suppose I'm loud enough to barge my way in to pretend to be the host sometimes, but there are times when you feel like the guest. And it's a difficult place to be. Especially because we talk about the school as a family, we're all together, we're in this together, we're doing wonderful things, and you are doing wonderful things. We were doing wonderful things. But there are moments where you sit in the chapel, where you are talking to somebody and you feel that outsiderness that exists because nothing gets spoken. So very quickly, what can schools do? And I told you I'm not going to give you a full recipe, but these are ideas, these are things that you need to start thinking about, is get educated about the statistics, Get educated about the language, get educated about your responsibilities as staff, as leaders of schools, as teachers. Know what the situation is that exists at your school. Think about the challenges of your environment. Think about the policies that you have. Think about the facilities that you have. Think about the codes of conduct that you have. I'll show you an example of a code of conduct shortly. I'm working with a school that currently, a really big school in Melbourne. I think it's the sixth largest school in Victoria. They have got 4 transgender students at their school. 2 in year 8, 1 in year 10, 1 in year 11. And when I go back, we present to the board around the issues of let's start to talk. So this is a prestigious Anglican school, sorry, that's also important, it's a church school. We're going to talk to their board about their desire to change the uniform into something that is gender neutral. So think about changing your school's traditional symbolic uniform, which is what they have, into something that is gender neutral. Think about the idea of toilet facility. It's the weirdest thing. I was telling Wayne and Carmen yesterday that I have a friend who works at St. George's Prep, just on the road. I probably shouldn't have told you that. He worked with, it's a prep school. A young person comes to him, says they're going to transition. He works with the staff. They have psychologists coming from UCT to work with the students. They call in all the parents of this, you know, and they talk this whole thing through. And everything is on track. They're nodding, they're supportive, this is fantastic, the school is wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Where's the kid going to go to the toilet? He can't go to the toilet. Can't go to the toilet with my kid. The toilet issue is the strangest, most controversial topic when it comes to ideas of gender variance that exists. Is where, how are you going to go to the toilet? There's a great, I think it's a Twitter feed about a guy who is a macho cowboy, I want to say it's probably Texas, is a transgender, female to male transgender person, and there are laws now, laws being put up in the States saying you must, on pain of fine, go into the toilet of your gender at birth, your sex at birth, beg your pardon, your sex at birth. And so he's having a ball, he's wandering into the ladies' loo. Cowboy hat on, taking photos of himself with these women walking in behind him, going, "What's happening?" It's great. It's a very cool. It makes you think. Inclusive curriculums. Think about curriculums. There is no place that you cannot bring these issues in naturally. I'm not a proponent of today. We're going to be talking about gay issues. Today we're talking about disability issues. Let's talk about people of colour. It needs to be something that's naturally brought in. I taught economics, and I could weave this stuff in quite comfortably. You can, the pink dollar, you know, that's an important spending, the idea of the spending, and talking about that leads to those discussions. English is obviously something quite natural. Why, when you talk about, in computer science, when you talk about Alan Turing, do you not mention the fact that he was gay, that he killed himself for being gay? Or for being identified as somebody who is gay. And there is that need for that honesty and for students and people to hear themselves reflected in our own discourse. Engage with students openly and honestly and be visible allies. There are so many wonderful, wonderful staff members and people that I'm sure are on your own cohort of colleagues, etc. But are they visible? Do the students comfortably know that that is somebody where there is a safe space in that classroom? And it is important, it is vital for schools to have wonderful, brave teachers who are out. We have one who I spent my time admiring while I was bishops because I wasn't raising the flag. He worked hard. And the rest of us sat there and went, oh, hey, we're carrying on with our careers, but that's a man who, that's a hard school. Okay. So let me tell you about what schools, let me tell you about a particular project that I work on. And I think it's easier if somebody else tells you, so. So this is the project that I work on with the Human Rights Commission.
Before The Fair Go Sports Project has created an environment where we feel comfortable saying that we support sexual and gender diversity.
The aim of the Fair Go Sport Project is to create safe and inclusive environments for same-sex attracted and sex and gender diverse students, primarily through sport. The Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission has worked in partnership with Reservoir High and with the support of the Safe Schools Coalition Victoria to pilot the project. The Fair Go Sport Project is really important because research indicates that same-sex attracted and sex and gender diverse young people experience most abuse at school and feel least safe in sport. This can and does have serious implications for the health, wellbeing and human rights of many same-sex attracted and sex and gender diverse young people.
I told my mom, tears rushing down my face, she's like, Ben, you've loved girls since before pre-K.
I got involved with Fair Go Sport because I'm an athlete myself, so I enjoy sports a lot. I also have gay friends at school that I want to support.
I feel that making sure everyone feels safe, whether they're gay or not, is about good sportsmanship.
Fair Go Sport projects are staff and student-led. I guess I was motivated by supporting student-led action. I also facilitate a gay-straight alliance group here at school, and through discussion I know that not all same-sex attracted students feel safe in the sporting arena, so doing something to address this was important.
There was a real equality between the teachers and the students, and we all have an equal say as to what would be best for our school and what would be best for our students, and I think this equality was really crucial to the success of the project.
One of the biggest highlights of the Fair Go Sport experience for me was letting off the balloon at Athletics Day.
So on the day, we had a vast majority of students wear Fair Go Sport socks, wristbands, badges and tattoos to show their support.
It really came from the students. They spoke with staff, got together, and I've seen the kids just evolve into such a united group, and their words and their actions have spread across the school.
I was gay, I would think hip-hop hates me. Have you read the YouTube comments lately? Man, that's gay, gets dropped on the daily. We become so numb to what we're saying.
Students are changing their behaviour. They're realising that saying that's so gay isn't cool. They're saying it less and stepping in when people do say it.
One of the highlights of Fair Go Sport Project was presenting at the National Safe Schools Symposium and seeing all the other schools and teachers and organisations get really inspired and wanting to really actively make a change as well.
It's no difference, live on and be yourself.
As an Aboriginal student, I understand what it's like to be a part of a minority that is discriminated against. With the Fair Go Sports program, I really wanted to be a part of something that will help other minority students feel safe and happy at schools.
When Reservoir High School decided to get involved in the Fair Go Sport project, it just made really good sense. We knew we wanted to make a difference to the health and well-being of same-sex attracted and gender-diverse students, because we knew those students had greater issues with depression and anxiety. And we knew that too, that same-sex attracted students had greater difficulty getting involved in sport in school, and yet sport makes sense.
Sport offers so many benefits to children, both physical and mental. And the research shows that same-sex attracted students are not as likely to get involved in sport. And I felt that, you know, that's a really important aspect from my point as an educator that we really needed to fix. And those students needed to have that opportunity to take on the benefits of sport and also to make them feel more connected to school.
One of the highlights of the Fair Go Sport Project was also interacting with the teachers. We could see another side of the teachers was not only are they teaching, but they're also teaching life skills as well, how to respect others and to be around others.
And the results of our survey suggests that we've been really successful in that the kids are feeling more at ease at school, more comfortable at sport, in class.
I'm going to pause it there, sorry, a few more on this then, but just to talk about a couple of things. I've spent a lot of time, I've spoken to both Mark and Marg and Mel and whatever, Nick's the other one who was on the video as teachers, and they spoke about their fear, and it was really interesting to think about. You've done this amazing project, but even like a year or two later, you're still reflecting on what held you back, where that fear came from. For Mark, the principal, it was the fear of, well, I'm walking into the school, he was a fairly new principal, and the first thing that I'm doing in a staff meeting at the beginning of the year is talking about same-sex attracted and gender diverse students and this project that we're about to start. The staff want to know about curriculum, the staff don't want to know about this, they're going to challenge me. Why should I be doing this? Marg, the student welfare, the student wellbeing coordinator, knew, yeah, she had those resources. And as she would take them to teachers would say, no, I can't teach this. I don't have the knowledge. I can't do same-sex attraction and gender diversity in my PE class, etc. I'm not going to do it. Mel was interesting, the person who ran the Gay Straight Alliance. There's an interesting backstory, but her feeling was, well, as the lesbian teacher, am I going to be seen to be promoting and pushing a particular agenda? Shouldn't a straight person be running this? And why is it the gay person who gets thrown that and leads that charge? So the project, just very quickly, there's another 2 minutes. Oh, it's got 1 minute. So the project really aims to build safe and inclusive sporting environments by promoting awareness. But the wonderful thing about it is that it starts there. And when you work, as you saw, you work with this sort of working group of staff and students and young, you know, from varying ages, etc., is that we go through a sort of action learning sort of process. They do a survey about where is their school, where do they want their school to be, what is the current reality, and they look at the results of the survey, they bring their own anecdotes, etc. Well, that's your vision, that's what you want your school to be, that's where your school actually is. What are your strategies? What are you going to do to change the situation that currently exists? And again, we focus on sport and PE, but there is no way. It's like trying to herd cats. You cannot keep that discussion on sport and PE. It's what can we do? Let's go and do this. Let's put this up. Let's do that. Change the policy. We don't want to just change the sports policy. Let's change the whole policy. Let's, when we talk about the matric dance or the end of year dance, we need to actually stand up and say, you are allowed to bring your same-sex partner to this dance, and we will actively support that. And it is okay if you want to come in a dress to make it more controversial. And then what actions are you going to implement? It's not at all about getting kids to come out. And I think this is a really important thing in this whole discussion. Whether or not staff come out or students come out, it's not at all that. There's a wonderful researcher in Australia called Caroline Simons who does a lot of work, particularly in sport. And she talks about the need for young people to feel, just forgotten the term completely, to feel connected with their environment. Sorry, I've really just blanked that term. That she uses a really beautiful term around that ability to feel integrated in the environment. Unconditional self-acceptance is her term. Sorry, I knew it was going to come to me at some point. Is that we need unconditional self-acceptance, and you cannot have that if you're in an environment where that doesn't acknowledge you. And very quickly, we work on these 5 key practices. I know that for those of you who are maths teachers, there are actually 6 up there, because this is becoming more and more important. If you read the web page, these are our big 5, but we're about to include the 6th one because it came through when we did the work with hockey. It's all been backed up through the research. People at La Trobe University has come and looked at this project and researched it as well. But we felt that we were missing this acknowledgement of the human element, the acknowledgement of the uncomfort that many people have in discussing this, and how we discuss this, and the sensitivity around discussing it. And I cannot, and I'm in a room full of leaders and school leaders, I cannot stress enough that, to me, is the most important. If you do not have the leadership will, the leadership determination to give staff the space, time, space, etc., students the space, then this is not an issue that you should be thinking about. Some examples of what they've done. There's some amazing things that they have done. I've just grabbed a couple. Obviously, it starts with, they have a Fair Go Sports Day. In fact, that's their big athletics day. A lot of schools have done that. Here's an example of a sporting code of conduct. This is the Fair Go one. This is the one of the American website, Gleason. And people sign on to that. One of the schools had a huge, big sort of the size of that back wall over there, a banner that says, we're not all the same, but we are all equal, as they walk into their gym, and students sign that as they walk into the gym as a visible sign of support. I wore my Fair Go Sports socks today. They're a ridiculously good marketing tool, I'll tell you that for free. I took, I have to take 38 across to London, but there you go. They had a knockout homophobia dodgeball competition, and I was conflicted on with making an aggressive dodgeball to knock out homophobia, but okay, we'll go with that. Lots of fun. So I'm going to end there. please ask any questions. I'm happy to try to answer some of the more complicated. Oh my goodness, okay.
Can I?
Yes.
There's actually plenty of time because the plenary session starts at 11. But I am aware that there may be some people who have commitments during tea time, which starts now. So if you feel that you need to slip out, I'm sure that Bob will not mind if you slip out if you've got some commitments. But otherwise, there is time to do this, have tea, and go to the plenary session. Are we happy with 10 minutes of questions?
I'm happy to chat. Can I start back? Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was great. You mentioned earlier, people have noticed as well, post schools are kind of taking this approach of what we try not to bring this into the classroom. Isn't that hogwash? The idea that you could keep sex and gender and things like that out of the classroom, I mean, my response to that would be, you know, if you have gender and you bring it with you,
that's what you're walking into the classroom.
Yeah, then it's there. I mean, one of the things I want to talk to my students about is as a way to kind of contextualize their own worldview, to say, you know, think about how like overtly straight you are.
Yes. Yes.
And then kind of reverse it, like with the other part.
Yeah.
What is your response to people talking about in those kinds of terms?
Well, I think it's interesting that people think in those sorts of terms, that we are able to make a boundary somewhere and say, well, we don't talk about these issues at all. And then, I'm not sure that I can respond any other way to agree with what you're saying. It's that we walk in with gendered preferences, gendered behavior. That's how we act. And if boys in particular, and even people who work the staff, are only seeing one particular gender expression being validated, then that's how we perform, to get into Judith Butler's stuff. All right, well, I must act like that in order to get a promotion. So if I want to be a staff member here, I cannot be seen to display my feminine characteristics, because then that is not what is valued here. And I think that we delude ourselves by thinking that we can keep the boundary, as you said. Yeah, I agree entirely. It's fascinating that it is still the language that's coming out. We don't talk about this stuff here. We don't want to talk about it here. That's for the parents. And there's a great debate about, or the great discussion around, well, what are the parents doing? Should we leave it there for the parents to discuss? And, you know, what is the parents' responsibility? But there does seem to be more and more thinking around, well, the parents are abdicating that responsibility and throwing the kids in and saying, well, we've given you $20,000. Good luck. Please sort that out. So, yeah, I agree. Thank you. Thank you very much. John had a hand up. No, I'm in that way, sorry.
Yeah, just a quick comparison seeing you.
Sorry.
My son, who is in 2006, two things happened at the electric board. One boy, the first kind of deputy he's doing at school, brought his same-sex partner.
Yeah.
Another boy in the same class brought someone's mother as a partner. He was here.
I was at that trick dog
something. 2006. The boy who brought the mother, and the comfort it was he was a hero. And the boy who brought the same-sex partner was anathema. My daughter is 15. She turned 16 this month. She's in grade 10. And she was talking about her year group at the moment. And on the telephone, I listen deep to the conversation, talking to a friend about the various characters in there, the individuals in the year group. She said, well, so-and-so has now said, well, from now on, I'm gay. Mm-hmm. You know, and this one has declared that she's bi. And so there's this kind of, I suppose, struggle with identity. But they are doing it quite openly. So there is a change, you're not nearly
post-day. I'll put that up to you.
But that was just an aside. In this conference, there have been two things happening. One, what is happening in this classroom, and it kind of taking on the chauvinistic viewpoints of schools like ours. And at the same time, in other venues, we've seen that the philosophies are certainly being expressed. get favor. You know, we're raising boys, we become men, because it's inheriting men to be leaders, and we're going to make them strong leaders. Mm. You have an issue with men being leaders, so that's... Mm.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a tension.
That tension exists. How do you deal with that? That tension exists. I don't know how you deal with that at a conference like this, other than pointing it out and making people think about it. Just on that point about the chauvinism and the difference between men and women, there's some interesting reading, and I would urge you to go do some reading. You know, we through the 90s, again, sorry, here comes the hand grenade, at the bookstore down at the Mallet Centre, there are all those wonderful books about raising boys and teaching boys and working with boys and all those sort of James Dobson, etc. There's some really great stuff in that. The more and more research is coming out saying that that's not, there is less of a difference between teaching between boys and girls than there is within the stream of boys. With the point that I made at Jonathan's speech, is that a girl who is competitive is as competitive as a boy who is competitive. There is no difference in any of that. Mm-hmm. And that boys who are quiet and readers and thoughtful are as thoughtful and quiet and verbal as girls are. That maybe we should be, you know, maybe this conference and the girls' conference needs to think about, well, we're teaching, I don't know, throwing it all out here and making it all up, but, you know, these types of kids, boys or girls, or other, these types of kids, what's the best strategies for those types of young people? And it's not necessarily the gender stuff is becoming less and less important, certainly in the academic world, because the biological difference is not a great difference anymore. And that's a challenge for us to rethink that stuff that we've been reading and that we've been presented here. So, sorry, yeah. Can I just, that gentleman over there, sorry.
Yeah. My question is on two fronts. First is using your parental cap and then using your teacher cap.
Big part
of first using your hat as a parent and then using your hat as a teacher. Well, the solution, I'm not sure when you start discussing these things.
Yeah.
And I was managing these under 11 boys the recent squash festival,
yeah.
And I was taking them for a movie, and I'm listening to the talk that they were, and suddenly they were saying something that guy in our dorm is a bit gay.
Yeah.
And these guys are 10 and a half and 11, and my son is one of the four, and I'm thinking to myself, I've had a discussion of this nature with my son, and obviously his perceptions will be totally skewed about what is a gay person and what, and I'm not sure when we're supposed to start the discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, backtracking that 20 years ago, if I had to engage with a white person or a black person, that would be news in the house.
Yeah.
I'd say, I met this black guy. Or, you know, there'd be some questions around it.
Yeah.
And now, my kids, when they bring their friends, they never talk about color. So we've gone that far in terms of race, that we don't identify color. So I'm really asking, when do you start discussing this, and are we going to get to the stage 20 years' time where nobody cares what your color is and nobody cares what your sexual preference is?
My hope that we do, I'm hoping that it's faster than 20 years, but it is my hope that we will. I think society is moving that direction. But to touch on the point earlier about the when you start talking about it, it's a really difficult one, but I suppose the challenge to you and to all of us here, particularly those who teach in the prep schools, is we have this need to keep children asexual, particularly young children. And the reality is that they are talking about it, and that, and it is at a younger and younger age. And you know, one of the big learnings for me recently has been particularly around the transgender. I was talking to a principal at a school in Melbourne, who has a year one student who has transitioned, so grade one, and so those issues are being spoken about at a year one level, where you talk about that within your class and what has happened. So-and-so was whatever Sam and now Sally, and this is what's happened.
So
you can talk about it.
Year one is what age? Six
or seven? Grade one.
Can you know that maybe?
Well, okay, I'm not going to move into the transgender stuff. Becomes a really interesting discussion. Yes, you can. And as I said, that study from the UK is saying that 40 to 45%, I think, know their sexual orientation by 13. So that means that they've been struggling with it before 13. You don't suddenly arrive. But added to that is that young people, there is a fluidity of sexual preference. So, you know, you I might like boys now, and I like girls then, and then I like boys again, and then I like girls again. And it's about destigmatizing that movement and saying, no, that's okay. I had a chat to Common yesterday, I'm reporting at Common, because it was a really interesting chat about the playbox in your class. Common teachers, yeah?
The great R's.
Great R's, yeah.
About the dresser corner.
Yeah.
Which I was thinking of, and I think of the presence of a dresser corner in grade R classroom, and suddenly in grade one, it disappears.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying being gay is dressing up, but what I mean is that there is no presence of something to just have fun, yeah, except for climbing apparatus or...
Yeah, but also the conversation was around what is in that dresser corner. It's firemen and policemen and doctors and chefs. Where's the ballerina? Why are we scared to put the ballet dress in there? And it's about examining our own thinking. I mean, it's a lot of talk. I'm throwing things at you and saying, challenging you. But it's about having that discussion with your colleagues, in your prep school or within the school as a whole, and saying, well, how do we start to talk about this issue? And when do we start to talk about these issues? And it is tricky, because I promise you, at the beginning I said it was messy. It is tricky, it's a concept. Well, by 10, they should know about this and this and this. By 12, they should know about this and this and this. It's about the most important thing, seems to come from the research, by creating an environment that is inclusive and accepting. And if a boy wants to come to school in a dress, that it not be the biggest thing in the world. That is an expression of who they are at that particular point in time, and that they're probably not gay if they're dressing up in a dress at 5. That's actually okay. That's just, you know what I mean?
Just when we have Drunk at Sydney's Day, there was one year, you asked whether you could come in a dress. I said, didn't really know what to say.
I think we talk about, some people are more comfortable talking about racism or sexism, but it's, that element's moving forward.
That's right.
And it's becoming more obvious, nearly on stage, and I think we should take comfort in that. I've got a situation, had a few situations where I've had a boy come out at 13, and it was awful. It was absolutely awful for that young man. More due to the boys around him not being equipped to deal with it, and it's not having the conversations early enough. Yet I had a year 12 captain in my school that was, it didn't openly, but everyone knew, was fully accepted.
Yeah.
And I think it was more about the age he was at. The boys around him were more able to deal with it.
There's some interesting stuff around that. I've just referred to one quick story at Bishops. There was a year where there were two students who were gay. One who was openly out and proud gay, and I think he took a lot of flak, but he was no-nonsense kind of gentleman, and one who wasn't. And it was that facility, which, I mean, the Bishop's staff might disagree with me, but that allowed the bullying to escalate, and the boys would think, oh, there you are, sorry. And it was this poor guy going, and pushed him further, I think, further into the closet. And he did come out subsequently, I think, but it was that resilience that they built up through, I don't know where they get that from, supportive friends, etc.
And that's very important, that network.
That network is important. And the teacher network is important. And the teachers recognizing, so that... I was in a discussion somewhere where somebody was saying something about, that's so gay, it's just a term, nobody means anything. It does mean something. To that kid who is gay, hearing that is the worst thing that something can be, that's so gay. You're such a girl. It does mean something. And, the language is important. Sorry, Cheryl, you're going to shout at me. I'm always used to Cheryl shouting. Thank you.
Thank you.